3 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show on this Wednesday. Kyler Murray officially listed as limited in today's practice. There were reports that he was throwing a little more aggressively on the side than maybe he was yesterday. Darren Urban tweeted out this morning, Kyler Murray still working on the side during the open part of Cardinals practice. He was dressed out in full gear, had his helmet. He was throwing with more velocity than he was on Tuesday. I kind of forgot about this, but Cliff Kingsbury reminded people about this today. We've kind of been down this road once before with Kyler. It happened just about a year ago at the end of the season when he played through an injury against the LA Rams. Here's Cliff Kingsbury today talking about how Kyler's game at Seattle was similar to last year in Los Angeles.
I think once again you saw that he knew his game was going to be adjusted, but he continued to battle, continued to compete, and still gave us a chance at the end. And I felt that was the same kind of performance he had the previous year in LA, not being able to run or leave the pocket or use, you know, one of his strongest traits, and still hung in there and made some big-time throws and took some big-time shots and gave us a chance at the end. I think that shows a huge step in progression, and you're not going to feel your best at this point in the season. None of those guys are that are back there taking snaps, and he understands that. But I think mentally he's definitely taken that step where he knows he can still play at a high level even when he's not at his best.
Do you remember that game?
The Rams game last year? Yeah, last game of the season. Yeah, they were
last game of the season, yeah.
Yeah, it was a close game. Like, that was a hard-fought game. I believe I think they were tied at one point in the third or fourth quarter. I think they were tied, and then the Rams took the lead, and the Cardinals came back, but I think they just came up short. I think, yeah, they were tied in either the third or fourth quarter. So that was the Ram game last year that was a close game.
Yeah, yeah.
The other game was the blowout. Coming off the bye, they got blown out. Then when they played them at the end of the season, it was a really hard-fought, close football game.
It was a 17-17 game in the third quarter.
Yep, there you go.
Kyler Murray to Damir Bird tied it at 17. Then the Rams got touchdown passes to Higbee and Robert Woods to go up 31-17. Kenyon Drake added a one-yard touchdown run. But here's what I remember about that game. And it's a little dicey because that's around the holidays and some of us take some time off. I can never remember who's in and whose isn't. But I do remember this about that game. I'm going to play a couple sound bites from that day. Kyler Murray, and I remember this very clearly now, was asked after the game if he had to convince the coaches to let him play in that game because he was so banged up from the week before against Seattle.
I mean, they had to, like, convince me just because, you know, I'm more concerned, you know, not wanting to, you know, injure it more. But at the same time, you know, I understood, you know, it is what it is. I'm a competitor. If I hurt it, I'm going to hurt it. So, you know, when I was out there, I wasn't really thinking about it.
Now I really remember it because I remember on the air the next day saying, okay, yeah, I didn't have to talk them into letting me play. They had to talk me into playing. Like, right. I was thinking I shouldn't play in this game. And they're like, no, you probably should go out there and try and see if you can play your way through that. And I remember thinking, boy, how interesting that is that a player, because usually, you know, you kind of have to hold the player back, right? Usually it's the player, oh, no, man, I'm playing. And in this case, the coaching staff kind of had to nudge him a little bit, like, no, man, you should probably try to play through this and see if you can manage it. I thought that was really interesting, and I had forgotten that until just now a moment ago.
There's two things I remember about that game specifically. One, David Johnson didn't play. And I remember us talking about he didn't play because they didn't want him to get hurt. That's why he didn't play, because he's gone. He's gone. And so David Johnson was healthy, and he sat on the sidelines and did not play. Do you remember that?
Yep. Clear as bell. Yes, I do.
Yeah. And we was like, he's not playing because they don't want him to get injured. Because if he gets injured, they can't trade him. And they're trading him. That was number one. Number two, Chandler Jones went into that game with the chance to win this, to get the sack title. Yes. But he came up just short to Shaq Barrett.
Yeah.
So Chandler Jones did not have a sack in that game. If he would have had one, he would have got the sack title.
Larry Fitzgerald, again, this is from last December 29th, okay, so after that game, credited Kyler Murray for playing despite that injury that he suffered the week before in Seattle.
That's all 1-2 in character right there. I mean, like I said earlier, he could have shut it down. I mean, this game is, you know, is meaningless, you know, if you really want to be honest with it. I mean, no team was going to the playoffs, and, you know, he could have shut it down. But it was important for him to come out there and compete. And, you know, that's just like building a foundation for the future. I mean, you know, he can push through things. He can play through things, because to play quarterback in National Football League, you gotta be tough. I mean, there's going to be things you're going to have to battle through, and, you know, he showed that he can do that.
For what it's worth, in that game, Kyler Murray, 26 of 42, 325 yards. He had two touchdowns. He had two interceptions. He only had two rushing attempts for 0 yards rushing in that game. So he was forced, given the nature of the injury, to become a very pocket-oriented passer in that game. And he, you know, put up decent numbers. Again, the Cardinals lost. It was a tie ball game late in the third quarter, early in the fourth, before the Rams kind of pulled away. But yeah, that, you know, I had forgotten all about that game. And now that we're playing cuts from it and I'm remembering it, oh, yeah, I remember talking the next day about, man, they kind of had to convince him to go out there and play in that game. I thought that was interesting. And doesn't seem to be the case now. I don't hear any talk about that. It's at this point, it's, okay, he's hurt. How hurt is he, and how much is it going to have to change what Cliff Kingsbury does on Sunday? Because as you pointed out yesterday, you don't want Cliff to have to change a thing, because if you do, then it's really going to limit the kind of player Kyler Murray is out there.
Well, I'll give you a topic for next week. This you can jot this down, Jordan. This will be our topic for next week. Sean McVay owns the Cardinals. They'll play the Rams after this Patriots game. He hasn't lost to the Cardinals. He's 6-0 against them. And he's beaten their ass a whole bunch of those times. You know, the 33-0 game in 2017. Yep. The game last year after the bye when they clobbered them. There was a 31-9, 34-0. I mean, Sean McVay, he's got the Cardinals number. 6-0, 4 or 5 of the games have been blowouts. Blowouts. Where they just annihilated the Cardinals. So, yeah, you know, we'll see how it goes. But here's the thing going into this Patriots game, you know, with Kyler too. You know, Cliff has had some success on the road. I mean, they're not a terrible road team. I mean, last year they won at Seattle, they won at Cincinnati, they won at the Giants. This year they've won at San Fran, they won at the Jets, they won at Dallas. They don't have a problem going on the road. It's not like they're a bad road team. I mean, you know, Cliff's a year and a half into his tenure. He's got 6 road wins. He's got 6. So, you know, and this could be 7 if he gets this win against New England. And he still has, you know, 2 more road games coming up, including one against the Giants, which he might get a win. So, you know, the Cardinals are not a bad road team.
I don't have time to play the cup, but I just will pass along real quick that Cliff did say today they're considering keeping all 3 quarterbacks active for this game, just in case they kind of have to dip into their bag of tricks, so to speak, and account for whatever might happen at the quarterback position. They're thinking about Strevler and Brett Hundley and keeping them all active. It's time for the injury report. It's brought to you by The Joint Chiropractic. Feel better with affordable routine chiropractic care from The Joint. You're back, baby. This is the first injury report of the week. Feels like a Friday, but it's only a Wednesday. Darrell Daniels, DeAndre Hopkins, Josh Morrow, Jalen Thompson, Charles Washington, Max Williams all did not practice. Justin Murray and Kyler Murray were both limited in practice. Interesting about Hopkins, they designate his injury as an illness. Now, I know in the past they've designated him as like a non-football injury / Veterans Day off kind of a thing. This one just says illness, so I hope it's just a standard Wednesday day off for DeAndre Hopkins and not anything else, because that would be, you know, we keep talking about Kyler and his injuries. That would be something that would be very unfortunate going into this week. Hopefully that's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, he usually finds a way to play. We're getting to know that about him. But, yeah, we'll keep our eye on it for sure.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show here on this Wednesday, yesterday we talked about Patrick Peterson and what factor he's going to play in free agency this coming offseason. Peterson's not the only current Cardinal player that could be a top target this offseason. We'll explain coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Patrick Peterson today talking about the matchup against the Patriots coming up on Sunday. They're expecting a lot of run looks from the New England Patriots?
Bill and Josh, they kind of cater to whatever the defense is kind of weak, have weaknesses on. So, you know, I believe they're going to definitely try to run the football, have a little bit of quarterback options in there, quarterback powers. You know, they're not really a team that take chances down the field. They're going to kind of take what you give them, kind of like a possession type offense. I believe what last week was Cam's first touchdown to a receiver in like 3 or 4 weeks. So we have to expect these guys to run the football, you know, put the ball in their best unit hands, and that's the offensive line right now. We can't let the run game beat us. We have to stop the run and force Cam to throw the ball in that offense to put the ball in the air.
Yeah, and they're going to probably try to have long possessions as long as they possibly can, keep the ball away from Kyler Murray and the Cardinals offense, because not a lot of people seem to think the Patriots are going to be able to score enough to keep up with the Cardinals if they're doing their normal thing. I found another free agency ranking on Patrick Peterson.
Oh, okay.
In terms of, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, this was from, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. If you missed our show yesterday, we talked yesterday about a CBS Sports article that said Patrick Peterson's going to be the number one cornerback on the free agent market this upcoming offseason, and that doesn't say a whole lot about the free agent market, that it's not very good, that it's not filled with great cornerbacks. The report I saw today, this was on the Athletic website, Gambo, they basically said the same thing. It's not a great market for cornerback free agents. Instead of having Peterson as the best cornerback, they had him as the third best cornerback on the market behind William Jackson of the Bengals and Shaquille Griffin of the Seahawks. They then had Peterson, Richard Sherman, Desmond King of the Titans, Michael Davis of the Chargers. And it's interesting what they wrote about Peterson, because I think they absolutely nailed it. He's a tough player to slot, they wrote. Peterson was suspended 6 games last year. He's played 99% of the snaps this year. He's put together a Hall of Fame caliber resume and at his best is an elite man corner. But his best days are behind him. And interested teams will have to determine how much to invest in a declining player. Ding.
Well, listen,
ding,
you could always
ding.
Move him to safety. Let's not forget that. So you always have the ability to put him at corner for 1 year. If you sign him to a 2 year, if a team signs him to a 2 year deal or a 3 year deal, I don't know that he finishes as a cornerback. He could move to safety. These other guys that you're mentioning, you know, Shaq Barrett's, you know, younger than him by a couple of years. William Jackson's 27.
Yeah,
27. Just turned 27. So he's a much younger player. So I think when you know the age factor comes in, you go sign William Jackson, he's going to be a quarterback for a few years. You go get Shaq Barrett, he's going to be a cornerback for a few years. You sign Patrick Peterson, you might have to move him to safety in a year. I mean, that's the thing you got to think about with these signings. The younger cornerback is more likely going to be able to stay at that position for a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the way the Athletic did it, they didn't rank him by position. They just did a straight top 50 list, and I just looked at all the cornerbacks. Peterson and Sherman are the oldest guys on the list by far. Peterson's 31. Richard Sherman is 33. Everybody else who made the top 50 is still in the prime of their career. William Jackson, Shaquille Griffin, as you mentioned, both still in their mid to late 20s. Desmond King is 26. Michael Davis is 26. But then something I didn't even think about when we had our conversation, we were so focused on Peterson yesterday, something I didn't even think about. Also in this top 50 list of Athletic top free agents going into next season, Hassan Reddick made the cut at number 49 overall on their list.
Wow.
The 49th best free agent available. What do you think
about that? Good for him. I mean, he got his career turned around. I mean, there was a thought that he could be out of the league. He was playing so poorly. And now he's, you know, playing well. He's rushing the passer, and he's having a good season. You know, fourth year in the league. It's a breakout season for him. He's in the right spot. And, you know, there's going to be a team that looks at him and says, you know what? I mean, who knows? Maybe he gets $8, $9, $10 million next year. Maybe somebody says, they found a role for him. He could rush the passer. Let him do it.
I'm looking up his stats right now because I don't know. Do you know them off the top of your head?
Hassan Reddick's
stats?
For what?
Sean Reddick's stat.
For sacks?
Sacks and everything like that. I didn't. He's played in 10 games.
I think he's got five sacks.
Five sacks. 9 quarterback hits. 10 tackles for loss. He is, looks like 5th on the team in tackles, 4th on the team in tackles.
And his coverage hasn't been bad either. I mean, his coverage hasn't been bad. He's been a short tackler. He's had a good season.
He's broken up 3 passes, which only Byron Murphy, Drake Kirkpatrick, Buddha, and Patrick Peterson have broken up more passes than Hassan Reddick. He has had, and it hasn't been all that quiet either. He's been like a sneaky good season. It hasn't been that sneaky for Hassan. It's been a pretty out loud good season for Hassan Reddick. I'll be fascinated to see how much he gets in the open market because he is that classic.
He's got to finish strong.
Nothing. Big year to finish before going into his contract season. And I would imagine some team is going to invest in him. I just don't know how much some team's going
to
invest in him.
Yeah, he's got you can't end up with 5 or 6 sacks, right? He's got to finish strong. I mean, if he can get 3 more sacks and end up with 8, all of a sudden, yeah. I mean, that's attractive to teams, you know, that look at those numbers. Now, again, it's not always about the sack. It's about the pressures and the hits and the hurries and all of that stuff too. But I think either way, he's in this league next year. How much he makes? I mean, as we saw with Jordan Phillips last year, get to 9.5 sacks, get paid. I mean, the Cardinals paid a guy based on what he did last year with 9.5 sacks.
Yep, and they paid him for 1 year. I mean, they paid him based off of what he did in 1 year. I mean, yeah, he is tops in the team in quarterback hits. He is tops in the team in tackles for loss. He's fourth on the team in tackles. He's had a heck of a year. One player who was not in the Athletics top 50. In fact, in the category players you are most likely to yell at me about for not having in the top 50, in no particular order, Kenyon Drake, running back, Arizona Cardinals, not in their top 50.
Are there any other, I don't know if you looked at this, are there any other running backs in the top 50? Was it just a running back thing? Were they don't like the running backs? I mean, he's having a good year. I mean, Kenyon Drake is playing well. He's young.
Aaron Jones is 17th from the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
I'm scrolling.
Keep them doggies scrolling.
Rawhide.
No, Kenyon Drake's, he's a good player, man. I mean, maybe, I don't, I mean, I,
Chris
it
Carson,
might be a running
Chris
back
Carson's
thing.
40, yeah, Chris Carson's 44th. So I've got Aaron Jones, I've got Chris Carson, and in the top 50, that's it. That's all I've got. Two running backs in the top 50, according to The Athletic, and that's it. And in this others,
Carson. I mean, I like Chris Carson. He's young too. Like Kenyon Drake, he's young and he's gone for 1,000 yards a couple times in his career, and he's got a lot of touchdowns. I would rate Carson ahead of him.
Yeah,
ahead of Kenyon Drake, I would.
Guys like James Conner, Leonard Fournette are a couple of other guys on the list, but not in the top 50. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Phoenix Suns.
Leonard
through...
Fournette could catch a pass from Tom Brady, you know.
That's just, hands
can't drop
of
those
stone.
Passes from Tom Brady.
That Leonard Fournette, man, hit him in the hands. He hit him in a bad spot. The Phoenix Suns drew some criticism for picking Jalen Smith with the 10th pick in the NBA draft. The newest Suns rookie thinks he's perfect for his fit here in Phoenix. He'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo show. Welcome back to this pre-Thanksgiving edition Burns and Gambo show here on this Wednesday, 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Thanks for hanging out with us. You know we appreciate it. Everything happened so fast last week between Chris Paul, the Bills game, the NBA draft, the Seahawks game, etc. We didn't get a ton of time to talk about Jalen Smith, the Suns draft pick at number 10 overall, and sort of the reaction around the NBA to the Suns, once again, at least perceptually, kind of reaching for a guy at number 10, right? Not a huge reach based off of some of the mocks and some of the big boards and things like that, Gambo, but certainly a little bit of a reach for the Suns at number 10. And they might have had the opportunity to move down a couple spots and still get this guy.
Yeah, listen, I think that, you know, when I said James Jones is probably, I expected that he would have a surprise pick. Look, nobody tie Jalen Smith to the Phoenix Suns outside of us. You know, we had him on our list as one of the players that they could draft when we narrowed down our list. But nobody else had him tied to the Suns. So I think it was very much a surprise pick. You know, they left guys like Halliburton on the board, who we had ruled out, you know, the week before. We said Halliburton was not an option for them. But a lot of people thought that, well, how can you leave a point guard like that? And he could play the one, he could play the two. Jalen Smith is a guy they liked. He could play center, he could play power forward. He can shoot the three a little bit, right? He rebounds. He was a double-double machine last year for Maryland. So they really liked him. You know, could they have gotten him later on? It's possible. I mean, I know there were teams that were trying to trade up to the Suns spot, and maybe they could have got two picks, and they could have got Bane and him. But they wanted to make sure they got their guy, and Jalen Smith was their guy. I don't know if they felt like there was somebody who was going to grab him, you know, right after they picked. You might have been able to got him a little bit later, but they didn't want to play around with it. This was the guy they identified, and this is the guy they really liked.
Well, today Jalen Smith was on the Bickley and Murata show, the Suns' pick, first-round pick, 10th overall in the NBA draft. He says he feels like he is a perfect fit for the Phoenix Suns.
I feel that I fit perfectly. I mean, pretty much my whole career I've been a sponge to all the people who's around me, just learning from everybody no matter who they are. And I feel as though that on a court, my offensive versatility and defensive versatility is just going to help put the Suns over the edge.
It's the defensive part where a lot of people have questions about him. But he thinks that because the draft got pushed back. I mean, again, remember, the draft happened in November. We usually see it in June. He thinks that helped his game evolve a little bit.
The first time when you first heard it, like, yeah, it was tough because you was expecting a certain day, then they pushed it back another day, and then they pushed it back another day after that, and it felt like there was no end to it. But at the end of the day, it was just a little extra work, you know, pretty much the warm-up, getting ready to start. So it was all worth it, and I pretty much was able to evolve my game a lot longer than most draftees have, rather like 2 months. I had like close to a year to just continue to improve.
He had a year, basically, to try to work on his game, improve his game, make his game better. It's going to be a real quick turnaround for him and the rest of these rookies, right? I mean, there's no summer league, no training camp, no rookie camp, nothing, man. Just get up. The training camp starts next week. That's it, man. You go. Yeah, that's all you got.
Yeah. Listen, I know the Nets had interest in him a lot. The Nets really liked him. I think they were picking 19th. And so I know a little bit later on, that's, you know, teams really started liking him. He played out of position last year, had a need. But he was all Big Ten as a center. He could block shots. He could shoot the three. He's athletic. He can get up and down the court. I mean, there's a lot to like about. Now, you know, the thing with the draft is, I mean, anytime a player goes where they don't expect you to go, people are all concerned about it. I don't know why, but it was the same thing last year with Cam, right? Oh, he, you know, if you would have picked him 10 spots later, it would have been a great pick. But when you pick him, same thing with Jalen Smith. If he would have got picked 19th, oh, that's a really great pick. But he got picked early. Oh, that's a risky pick at that spot. None of it really matters because a lot of the guys that were picked after him are not going to make it in the NBA. The question is, can he make it in the NBA? Doesn't have to be a star. Can he be a rotation player, a role player? Cam Johnson ended up being a good player last year. Not a great player, but a good player. You need guys like that. Space the floor, knock down shots. This kid can run up and down the court. He'll shoot some threes. He can block shots, rebounds the basketball well. There's a lot to like about his game.
Yeah, I know in the aftermath, and again, we didn't have a ton of time to talk about this a week ago. I know in the aftermath, the biggest question about him was just his defense. He's for as fluid as he is and athletic as he is, I think the big question is he quick enough to guard power forwards in today's NBA? And that's I think one of the big question marks about his game. But I think specifically to draft night, and I know you ruled this guy out and you had said all along the Suns aren't interested. But when Tyrese Halliburton was staring at the Suns at number 10 and he was available, it's not even so much, at least the impression I got, it wasn't even so much anti-Jalen Smith. It was, how could you not take Tyrese Halliburton?
Yeah.
Now, I sit next to you 4 hours every single day. I knew they weren't going to take Tyrese Halliburton. You've been saying it for the better part of a week leading up to the draft. But I think around the NBA, that was the anti-Jalen Smith feeling. It wasn't so much that they took this kid. It was they took this kid because they could have taken Tyrese Halliburton and they chose not to, and I think that was kind of the crux of the criticism when it was all said and done.
I mean, if you remember what I said as to reason why the Suns were not going to take Tyrese Halliburton, and I'm just going, you know, with my notes here, They thought that shooting guard was his best position. They did not think that he was a point guard. They did not think that he was quick enough or dynamic enough to play the one, but they also didn't think he was quick enough or dynamic enough to play the two. So he was a combo guy. But the Suns did not view Halliburton as a guy that was going to be a point guard. They view him as more of a shooting guard. Now, there was a lot of players that, you know, we ruled out. Killian Hayes was a guy we ruled out, and RJ was a guy we ruled out, and a bunch of guys we said no. I think Neesmith was another guy that we said no to. But Halliburton, we were right. Halliburton was the one guy. I mean, Vinny Murata loved him. A lot of people loved him.
A lot of people loved him.
Yeah, Yeah, we knew that they and we knew for a while that they were not going to take him. He was not on my board of players that I said he has the seven players that the Suns could draft. Jalen Smith was on that list that I had, but Halliburton wasn't. And I think it wasn't, it was more about what Halliburton isn't than what he is. Again, they didn't think that he was a point guard. They thought that he was more of a two guard than a point guard. So they weren't going to take him. And Smith was a guy, and I know what you're saying about the power forward spot, but hear me out here. There's a couple ways to look. He can't guard power forwards in the league. Well, no, he can. He can guard a lot of power forwards in the league. But there are some that he can't. Well, then one of the matchups that he can't guard the power forward, well, maybe he could guard the center on that team. And maybe Saric could guard the power. Saric plays power forward in that game. So what the Suns have done, and this is very... And this is very smart from them because not every player can guard every player. I mean, not everybody can guard everybody. I mean, Jalen Smith may not be able to guard every power forward in the league, but maybe he can guard 20 of them. And in those 20 games, he can play power forward. And maybe there's five centers that he can guard, on teams that have a good power forward. Okay, so he could guard the center there. He could play some backup center. So I think their ability to mix and match will very much depend on what the matchups are.
He was also asked by Bickley and Murata about the discipline that he got as a kid growing up from his dad. It was a very interesting back and forth with our own Dan Bickley.
You were the son of a retired naval officer, so I'm guessing you grew up with some discipline in your life?
Oh, yeah, I grew up with a whole lot of discipline.
Tell us about it.
A lot more than most people can manage.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Give us an example.
Pretty much just like, obviously, that military stereotype of just being strict, always everything has to be a certain way. Pretty much everything has to be perfect. You have to be perfect, and no matter what, you just got to continue to carry yourself the right way and just always put forth an effort to everything, and that's just how I was raised with my father.
Yeah, he even told a story about the Indiana game when he was with Maryland where he kind of was showboating after a particular game. And he said he got a call from his dad. He got a call from his dad because it was a controversial ending, the way he was kind of flaunting it all.
Pretty much before I got on the plane, he called me. He told me that he was kind of disappointed in the way I acted and that that was very uncharacteristic of me. And, I kind of realized that, and I told him I was sorry for it. It was just emotion at that time. And he understood where it came from. So at the end of the day, I learned from it, and I moved on from it.
I cut you off before I hit play. What were you going to say real quick?
I watched that video before he was drafted. There's a video of it. He taunts the Indiana crowd. He had the best game of his career, 29 points, and he sank the game-winning layup as Maryland beat Indiana. It was the best game he's ever played. And then he, the emotions got the best of him. He started mouthing words. This is my court. Tapping the Indiana logo and stuff like that. It's almost like planting a flag on the Dallas Star or something like that. So Mark Turgeon was the coach, and he stepped in right away and kind of shut that down. And that just, and then he got escorted off the court by some of the assistants. And that's just not really who he is. But in that game, he went to the trash talking because he had the best game of his career and sank the game-winning layup.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show on this Wednesday, it was supposed to be the best game you are going to watch tomorrow. You can still watch it, just not tomorrow. We'll tell you where they moved it to next on the Burns and Gambo show. Of course, part of the Thanksgiving tradition is football, watching football, the now triple header every single year in the NFL on Thanksgiving Day, always involving the Lions in the morning, always involving the Cowboys in the afternoon, and then usually involving a couple of teams that we typically give a crap about at night because we usually don't care about the Cowboys or the Lions because they haven't been that good. And it was kind of par for the course this year.
Why do the Lions always get that game?
You know what? It's funny. It's funny that you say that. I'm going to Google it again because every single Thanksgiving, Gambo, I ask myself the same question, and I don't Google it in the moment. I'm watching the Lions, and I go, why is it the Lions always get to play on Thanksgiving?
It's like out of, if you could pick five teams who have no desire to watch, none. I mean, the Lions are one of the five.
You guys know the origin of why it started with the Lions on Thanksgiving Day?
No,
I had
please,
to look this
tell.
Up just 2 days ago because I, too, was wondering, why is it always like none of us want to see that?
No,
none of us
don't
want to
see
that.
Nope.
Yes. So I read that the owner back in, I think it was in 1920, or no, 1934, a long time ago, the owner back then started the tradition of the Thanksgiving Day game as a gimmick to get people to show up to Lions games just to boost attendance because nobody was going. So the owner thought, well, if it's like a holiday tradition, maybe people will come.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
That is why.
There you go.
And
I learned something
that's
today.
Why. Okay. That's
I think
why
it was 1934 is when that started.
Jeez. So well, it was a gimmick.
Still bad. Yes.
Yeah, still bad. Well, the game's tomorrow, and we've got some news about this. It's the Texans-Lions in the morning, the Washington football team and the Dallas Cowboys in the afternoon, which actually has division implications in the NFC.
The most competitive division in the NFL.
Because it's the most competitive division in the NFL, the NFC East. Washington and Dallas.
Who do you think is going to win that division right now?
The New York Giants.
Me too.
The New York Giants.
The Giants are going to win the NFC East.
I think the Giants are going to win the NFC East. Now, the night game was supposed to be the Ravens and the Steelers. Here's where things get wonky. The Ravens have a COVID-19 outbreak. They've added three more players to their list. Yep, Calais Campbell is one of them. Patrick McCary, Matt Skura are the others. They now have seven players who have either tested positive or who have been identified as close contacts. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
High risk, yep.
Yep. The NFL has decided to postpone the game. It wants to use the rest of the week to conduct more testing and contact tracing. The announcement came about 31 hours before they were supposed to kick off the game. Juju Smith-Schuster, the Steelers receiver, not happy about it, tweeted out, "First, the NFL takes away our bye week because another team can't get their COVID situation together. Now they take away our Thanksgiving primetime game for the same reason, SMH." Remember, they had to have their schedule rearranged because of the Titans outbreak a few weeks ago. So now that Thursday night game, not being played tomorrow, it's been moved to Sunday, and NBC, who was going to air that game tomorrow night, will have a doubleheader on Sunday, and both will be nationally televised games. So in the middle of your Sunday afternoon, in addition to the games that are on Fox and the games that are on CBS, you will have a game on NBC that the entire country gets to see, the Ravens and the Steelers, and then later that night, they'll have the other Sunday night game, which is the Bears and the Packers. So that's how they're fixing it for now.
More there time for me to watch a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. You know I love Charlie Brown.
I know you do. I know you do. You watch both. I think a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving is only like 23 minutes long.
Yeah, so now two football games on Thanksgiving instead
just
of three.
Just two tomorrow. That's it.
And they're going to find a way to play this game Sunday. But the guys that tested positive were the running backs, right? Ingram and Dobbins.
Correct. Initially, yes.
And now you got seven guys, but yet somehow they're going to be able to play on Sunday?
So they think. It gives them more time. Because again, some of these guys, you know, again, they're on the list. But remember, in the NFL, when you're on the list, you're either on the list because you tested positive or you're on the list because you came in contact with somebody who tested positive. If you came in contact with those guys, you can come off that list in like 4 or 5 days. So maybe a lot of these guys don't have it. They just came in contact with somebody who does, and they might be available to play on Sunday as long as they don't show any symptoms. I don't know. They're just trying to buy themselves some more time, man.
I mean, that was the game to watch. You think about that schedule tomorrow. That was the game. That was your marquee game. That was two AFC heavyweights, primetime game. Now you get the pathetic Texans and the Lions and the Washington football team. And ugh. I mean, ugh. I mean,
I know.
You went from
but you know what?
The Ravens and the Steelers are turkey and gravy, and these other games are chopped liver. You ever have liver? It's disgusting.
I've never had chopped liver.
It's never just disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? It's football on Thanksgiving, so I'll watch it. It's part of the day. It's part of the day.
You had a good game.
I know. And you know what? And the thing about it is, and I guess this sort of helps Sunday, there aren't great games this weekend either. I mean, the premier matchup this weekend are the Chiefs and the Bucks. That's Sunday. Now, what sucks is that's exactly the same time now as the Ravens Steelers. So that kind of stinks. Chiefs-Bucks at the same time as the Ravens-Steelers. Maybe the Chiefs will blow them out so you don't have anything to worry about there, but that kind of stinks. You've got a divisional matchup Cardinals fans should keep an eye on with the 49ers and the Rams. Seahawks don't play until Monday night when they take on the Eagles. Beyond that, there aren't – okay, I'm sorry. Titans-Colts, that's a pretty good game. That one escaped my attention. Titans-Colts,
well, that's a big
Sunday
game.
Morning. That's a big game in that division. That's a
division,
big game
yep.
in that division.
Huge game.
Yep. Yeah. Speaking of the Buccaneers, Dan Graziano today on ESPN talking about the tension between Arians and Brady and how legit it might be. Take a listen to this.
There's a lot of theories, obviously, because it was supposed to work better than this. But one of them is that, you know, there is real tension, right? I mean, like Bruce Arians and Tom Brady just met, right? It's almost like, you know, Arians was watching some sort of movie star action hero and then met him in person and said, I thought you'd be bigger. But Brady had the ability to kind of direct how the roster was constructed to a certain extent, right? I mean, Leonard Fournette, LeSean McCoy, Rob Gronkowski, and most prominently Antonio Brown, a player that Bruce Arians was on record in the offseason as not wanting and saying negative things about. He's on the team because Brady wanted him. So if you're Arians, you're looking and going saying, this is what you wanted. We got you everything you asked for. Why aren't you delivering? Why doesn't it look like it looks in practice, and I think you're seeing some frustration bubble to the surface.
That's
remember Carson Palmer's first year with Bruce? Carson Palmer's first year with Bruce Arians, he threw 22 picks. It wasn't any good. You know, he didn't have a good year. It takes time to get used to Bruce Arians' system. The problem for Brady is that he doesn't have an arm like Carson Palmer. So in New England, almost all of the passes were between 5 and 15 yards. They very rarely went down the field. You know, if you remember those giant Super Bowl victories over Brady, I mean, once you get ahead and you got to have him throw the ball down the field, you've got him exactly where you want him. So in New England, you throw the ball 5 to 15 yards. In Carson Palmer, even though he struggled that first year, still had the arm strength to go down the field. So now I don't know what happens with Brady's. You know, does Bruce make an adjustment? Does Brady make an adjustment? I asked you the other day, could Brady actually want out? After 1 year, could he decide that, listen, I don't want to, this didn't work for me. Now, the pride thing got in the way. He didn't want to go play for New England again. He decided to leave and go somewhere else. He picked a really talented team with the Bucs, but so far, they're winning football games, but it hasn't really worked out the way people thought it would.
The Arizona Cardinals plagued with slow starts all season long. Why? And how can they prevent another one this Sunday in New England? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.